two in the corner, back by the wood pile.
Today I'd like to introduce you to the poet Katalski. The first time I saw him perform at a spoken word night, he went from a fevered rant about the current American administration to a tender piece about vulnerability. Struck by the capricious moods he was able to pull me through that night, I decided to invite Katalski out by the woodpile. First, can you tell me the origins of your name?
Katalski is a Polish man linked to the Russian Revolution. I get this name because I look like him. I'm a spitting image for the man, actually. You know, my real Polish roots surname is Sapkowski, but, you know, we're all from the same country. We know what's going on.
Okay. Did someone call you this when they saw you?
Yes, my wife called me Katalski.
So she knew who he was?
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, cause my wife, she's from Kazakhstan, and, you know, her first language is Russian, so she know a lot about this part of the world. And,
okay, so you're a poet. What generally drives you to write?
I'm driven to write because, one, paper listens. When none of the rest of the people want to, your paper will always hear you. Other than that, I'm inspired by things that go on around me, whether it's people, places, things, a word in the conversation, and I'm like, oh, that triggers a feeling, and I like to paint a picture with words, being I can't paint with a paintbrush, so it's hard to even paint a wall.
That said, do you want to go ahead and read one?
Sure.
This is from your first book or second book?
This is second. I've got three now. But Punctuating Life is the title, and also it has a namesake piece in the book, and the first piece called Punctuating Life. So that being said, Punctuating Life. I can't keep my feet on the ground. No, I can't keep my feet on the ground. You see, I'm dreaming away every night and every day. It's in my heart and in my soul, through my core and in my bones. I stopped living for yesterday when dreams began punctuating life. The past is the past, which haunts me in a way that inspires the future. I can't keep my feet on the ground. No, I can't. You see, I'm dreaming away every night and every day, and in these dreams are found exclamation, answering a question bound in quotations. The comma delineates pause for inhale and exhalation, breathing in fresh new life, period. I see it here and there all around me, surrounded by bright and shining faces, eyes glowing and heart fire of those who found the punctuation. I can't keep my feet on the ground. No, I can't keep my feet on the ground. You see, I'm dreaming away every night and every day. The future is now the future's today. It may not always be bright until you learn to turn on the light by punctuating life.
So what brought this poem on?
Well, you see, the book that came before it was I bashed everything I hated in that book, and I thought I need to make a opposite, like a polar opposite of that book, because I like to live a balanced life. If I'm going to hate something, I better love something, and so I like to promote love. And I thought there are so many people in my life that come and go. They're maybe just passing through. They stay a little while, and they add some kind of a punctuation to who I am. And so I thought, I want to strive always to be a better person. So let's figure out these things that punctuate life. This is called You Don't Have to Take Your Clothes Off. You don't have to take your clothes off. I wanted to know you before you did that. Your smile said enough to ignite curiosity. There is a fire deep within your eyes. Its source is something essential to the knowledge of who, what, when, where, and how you are able to laugh in such a manner so attractive. having such a radiant glow around you that others feel the need and invitation to make a greeting. Words passed between, making conversation, finding contrast in opinions creates stimulation. How lovely is it then that two people find attraction in casual disagreement? Intelligence is striking, and knowledge makes it beautiful. How then did you stray so far as to share such intimate details of yourself with the entirety of the world? Has cultural demise made humanity so shallow that you would or even should feel a need such as this to expose yourself even unto the naked truth, to find some here today, gone tomorrow popularity? There is so much more to you than what is underneath. You don't have to take your clothes off. I wanted to know you before you did that.
Okay, so I gotta ask, how did that?
This is a Facebook-inspired piece, okay? It's like, I got friends all over the world, and it seems like these 20-somethings, girls and stuff, they're like my friends from like Lithuania and other Eastern Bloc countries. They think that they're going to become popular or they're some kind of model because they take half-naked selfies. And I'm just like, you know, that's not why you're my acquaintance or my friend. It's because you had something maybe inspiring that I saw just like looking in your eyes through a photo. And now all of a sudden, you know, you left nothing to the imagination. And so where is beautiful in that? You know, it's like all of a sudden it become... We get desensitized to things by having it just poured out in front of our eyes so much, and so that's where that came from. It was like, you know, it's like every day, I don't even like good looking girls anymore. Not really, that's a joke. But
I won't tell your wife. You said that.
Yeah, I know, because she'll be like, what? What do you want with me?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, but that was the whole basis of that. Was I just like, wow, you don't have to take them off to be popular with the boys, because pretty soon they see so much of that and you're like everybody else.
So how does your Polish background affect the way you think, or do you feel it makes you a little different in this area? We're in Tennessee.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, so I think kind of differently than a lot of people. And you know, I get quite an inspiration out of with that, because my grandmother was Polish, and it just seemed she was pretty laid back, but she had a lot of wisdom in that. Even though I was born in America, it makes me feel like I can think on a level of someone in Poland or Eastern Europe, because their thinking and cultural backgrounds are a lot different than here. And so, yeah. Of course, after that last piece, it seemed like, well, they're kind of decaying too.
Yeah.
But it, I don't know, I like that it helps me to see things more deeply than some people may.
Your grandmother, she was around when you were growing up?
Oh yeah.
Did she tell you any stories, like anything, was it like uniquely from your Eastern Europe or Poland, that like parables or folklore that maybe affected the way you think now?
Well, she told me about my great-grandfather who came to America as a stowaway on the ship.
Really?
Yeah, and so that one's stuck with me quite a long time, because they, you know, we...
They didn't catch him?
No, no, see, when back then you came to Ellis Island, and these rich families from New York City would come and find you and then take you in, because they'd recognize someone that's trying to avoid being caught, apparently. And so they take people in and teach them a trade, educate them, and then allow them to use their surname. Because that's one of the funny things, how I got the story was... I asked my grandmother one night, I said, you know, my great-grandmother's surname was Weiss, but your maiden name was Sokowski, and I said, I don't understand any of that. So she told me that story. And so apparently a family named Weiss had taken my great-grandfather in. And then, you know, to help you get further along in life, then they'd let you use that name. And so he used the Weiss name for certain things, and then he'd use Sapkowski for other things, because he was a very interesting man. I wish I'd have been around to meet him, because he was the only white baseball player in the Negro Leagues.
Really?
Yes, and so I kind of understood where he got the name Whitey now, because they called him Whitey Sapkowski.
How did that happen?
He loved baseball so much, and he just wanted to play, and apparently was fairly good at it, and so everybody got along. I mean, they didn't make fun of, they didn't say anything about it. I saw a picture of him with wearing blackface with the team.
Really?
Yes, and so I was like, wow. But yeah, that just kind of, you know, I kind of feel like I've got some of that person's spirit in me, because, you know, he was a little bit out there, and you know, I may be out there too.
Well, your wife being from Kazakhstan, right? How has her experience affected your thinking?
Her experience and being married to her, again, you know, she's Central Asian, being from Kazakhstan, and they have everybody in the East think they have deeper thinking, I think, and you know, grew up a little bit more shallow than I can seem to have gotten some depth in my life as I've gotten older, embracing my ancestry, and then, you know, having a wife from a Far East kind of country, and I was like, wow. But yeah, everything, there's people are slow to anger, they think about things, and it seems like they always think about how what they do affects everybody else. And so they live a lot by karmic law. Uh-huh. And so, again, that she helps me to stay grounded, because Katovsky's a dreamer. And I kind of get the floating off the ground every now and again, and she'll pull me back down.
Okay.
There in the pale blue light, sitting in the separation of morning and night, watching curiously what became the nocturnal whisper which said my name, calling me to this place, wondering what fire burns behind closed eyes, waiting for the moment, patiently knowing that waking should be a natural thing. Yet she lay there in quiet calm, peaceful dreaming, beauty sleeping, studying deeply, such a wonderful sight. Even now, even so, she touched me. I feel it, this I know. Time growing short, soon the birds will sing songs of morning. What then shall become me when she wakes and sees that I've been enamored by silent splendor found while watching Sleeping Beauty?
Does anybody ever give you guff about some of your more political pieces when you speak out?
Actually, nobody ever has. I've been approached by more people that are like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm glad you said that, because that's what I felt. And I'm like, really? I said, well, you know, more people need to stand up and speak out. And
One thing I know this, because we're friends on Facebook, and one cause that you were particularly upset about was the Benghazi incident. And you have a piece about that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have it with you?
Yeah, it's a part of Anger and Truth.
Okay. Obviously.
you know.
But first of all, we'll explain it to, you know, because there's a lot of folks who don't, maybe don't pay attention to the news, or maybe they get it through a very filtered source. So this is your opinion, first kind of set it up.
Okay. The piece is called The Expendable American. Well, you know, the ambassador, Chris Stevens, was killed there. Right? So it was the anniversary of 9/11. And so there's big riots and everything going on. And, you know, by morning, we've got Chris Stevens, his aide, and a couple other men dead there. Right? And it seemed like cries for help. They knew this was coming. There's been quite a cover-up on everything, but they needlessly let people die.
They being the U.S. government.
Yes, the U.S. government. And apparently, you know, there's still some conspiracy theories going around about how they were trading him for another political prisoner. Yeah, the blind sheik or whoever. And so that came out later than after I wrote this piece, but I just found it that that the U.S. government finds the Americans' lives so expendable, just in order to move themselves forward in the greed machine, is what I call it. And so that's where the piece originated there. The expendable American. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, with lasers marking targets, waiting for permission to fire, establish justice, sending out a wire begging for help, ensure domestic tranquility. AC-130s airborne, fingers on the triggers, still waiting, provide for the common defense. More wires sent, no answer. Targets locked and waiting on the order, promote the general welfare. Soldiers fighting to protect diplomats and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves, outnumbered by sheer mass and weaponry, pilots and crew wondering, where is the order? And our posterity, with UAVs hovering overhead, do ordain and establish that these cries for help did not fall on deaf ears. This Constitution of the United States of America. Be it resolved that such establishment finds necessity to pick and choose which of its soldiers and diplomats shall become the expendable American. While blame for lack of leadership in the eyes of America plants itself firmly in the direction of three fingers past index on the ones who would point their fingers in blame. So yes, this was written specifically to my wife. It's called Love is a Liquid. So many try to find its measure, yet there is no science in love. Lust comes from chemical reaction, and once satisfied, disappears like smoke in the wind. I found something. Yes, I found something in someone who makes life flow. This has to be what love is, or even what love really does. For without her, where then would I go? Maybe I don't show it often, at least not like I say I should. But there is something I want to say to you. Listen now, please, if you only would. Some say love is solid rock, while others really just don't know. But you give it energy, yes, you make it flow. Together we saw a dream, dancing deep in the moonlight. It danced all around us and became reality on that very night. Still there is no measure, no mass or area to increase, for between us, love is a liquid flowing to the sea.
You seem very happy.
I am, and she understands my sense of humor, and she understands my moods sometimes, because all poets are moody. We are. Yeah. And so she's been a really good asset to have around in my camp. And
did she appreciate poetry before she met you?
I think so. She liked it. She's like my biggest fan. And,
oh,
you know, so you know, she hears everything I do over and over and over again, because, you know, I practice at home. And say, what do you think about this?
One last thing. You want to talk about your job, and does that inspire any poetry?
Well, sure, yeah. I'm an equipment salesman, and also do pump jobs.
You pump sewage.
I pump sewage.
You
pump poop. Yes, right. We do, and I've never been really inspired by the poo. But you know, my job also does lend me a lot of driving time, and so those hours of driving get spent a lot in thinking about some of these subjects. A lot of what I've read here tonight, every one of them actually started in my truck with a pad and a paper, driving down the road, scribbling in the language that nobody can translate, sometimes not even me. So then I have to go back home and go through it. And but I get to meet a lot of people. And those conversations sometimes spawn off into some of the content in my books.
So if folks want to, first of all, either order your book or get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
Well, you can get my book in several ways. You can get it on poeticclarity.com, which is my website. You also can get it at any one of the Nights of Free Speech. I always have books with me. You can get them on Amazon.com if you look up the name Katovsky, which is spelled K-A-T-O-V-S-K-I. So both the books will pop up there. Also, you can buy them at Logue's Black Raven Emporium, and you can buy them at East Side Story,
which is in Nashville.
Yes.
Yeah. And your Facebook?
You can find me. I have a Facebook page, Katovsky. And you can also email me at poetic.linguist@gmail.com.
All right. Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
In the Corner, Back by the Woodpile podcast is produced by a closet, a pocket, and a suitcase. You can email us at spuncounterguy@hotmail.com. And a special thanks to thebrofisticate.com.
Bye-bye.